Well, at this time, it gives me great pleasure to introduce a dude that I met Monday Night Airport Group like 25 million years ago, it feels like. And here he is, Mike.
Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it. My name is Mike C, and I am an alcoholic. where to start? I'm grateful to be here and be sober tonight. And I have 20 years of sobriety. My sobriety date is December 14th, 02. And if I behave myself for another month and a half, I'll get 21 years. And I don't know how I did that, really, other than I just didn't drink. But I took a lot of advice from a lot of people, and some are in this room tonight. And I'm grateful for that, because it's one alcoholic helping another. I wasn't born here, but this is my hometown. I spent most of my time here, but I was adopted, like a lot of us alcoholics are, you know, but I was adopted by a family member, so my last name is a family name. But I was with my dad when I was 3 years old, and he passed away. And it wasn't, that had nothing to do with drugs or alcohol or anything like that. He had a real bad bruise in his leg, and a blood clot broke loose, went to his heart, and he died. And I was there with him, and I went and ran to my mom and everything. And I have flashbacks on little pieces of it, you know. A lot of people say you cannot have memories when you're 3 years old. That's pretty traumatic, I guess, you know. So, and then he passed away, and it was just me and my mom. And she had a difficult, real difficult time, you know, raising me. It's hard, you know, it's really hard. So when I was 12 years old, we went to Bakersfield. She went in the hospital to have some surgery and everything. And she didn't come out of surgery. She passed away. I think she was cancer. She had cancer. So I'm 12 years old, and my mom's gone, my dad's gone. And my family had, my parents had two really good friends, you know. They were best friends of them. And they took me in and raised me. So I was raised by them. It was a good family. You know, I had a good life. You know, there was no abuse, there was no nothing. You know, it was like I was well taken care of, and I had three other kids, or my brothers and sisters, basically. You know, but I knew them all my life. We all grew up together, and we were all close. But when I was 12, that's when the alcoholics came in. And you know what? I don't know if those things in my life made me an alcoholic, but I know I was seeking some relief, some comfort, you know, and alcohol did that for me. And what happened is we would, back in the day, we could collect Coke bottles and stuff, get money, and get someone to buy us, you know, Strawberry Hill, wine, you know, I mean, stuff like that, you know, Brew 102, whatever, you know, and it was like that. And there was, and I lived in Tehachapi, California. And it was really small then. It's about bigger now. And there was a train wreck there, early 60s, right? And so back then, everybody went out and got the stuff off the train. I mean, there's appliances and stuff. And the train company didn't want them. You know, the insurance paid off and everything. And, of course, there were rail cars with beer. And people went out and got beer, cases of beer, filling up the garages and stuff. I got some friends, man, and we'd run down there, and this is several years later, we'd dig up beer cans from that thing. We got there on the railroad tracks. They're still buried, you know, and drink those, you know. It's like Pabst Blue Ribbon, and, this, you know, you had the church key to open them. There was no pop top, none of that stuff, you know. So alcohol was a really big thing for me, you know, and in the family I was with, it was very prevalent, too. I wouldn't call them alcoholics, maybe heavy drinkers, because they you know, had jobs, took care of the light things and everything. There was nothing, you know, off with the alcohol. It was just, it was always prevalent. And it was really prevalent in my high school years. I continued drinking through my high school years. We used to party all the time during high school. My first run-in with the law, with the alcohol, was in Los Alamos olden days. I was probably 15 years old, and I had a beer. And the sheriffs were walking around there, and they caught me, and they cited me for minor in possession. So, now that wasn't the worst part. The worst part was a buddy of mine was there, and they had a case of beer in the back of their truck, and they just made him pour it out, and they didn't give him a ticket. But I had to tell my mom, and I had to go to court, you know, and they slapped my hands and don't do that again, all this and that. But it was, you know, it was just the beginning, because as I got older, and I finally got 21, by the time I was out of high school, I was a daily drinker if I could get it, you know. And it continued on for years like that. And I ended up getting some decent jobs, but I also ended up losing some decent jobs, you know. And I just run amok. I moved down south for a few years and lived in a little town called Santa Paula, California. And I was working in the oil field, and the boom was on, and it was just, things were going crazy. I also like drugs too. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but from that point on, when I was down there, the drugs was going strong, and so was I. And, you know, but alcohol was always my first choice. And everything that went wrong, alcohol was involved. And I got to travel. I got to travel across the Western United States. And I got to run amok. And I never got in any trouble running amok. I always got all my trouble was always in California when I got home. And maybe I should have moved out of state. I don't know. But, you know, but that's how it works. And I was always a little hitch here. And finally, you know, I'd lose jobs and I'd have to come find another job. And I ended up getting married. Ended up having two kids. And I kept drinking. And we kept drinking. We kept partying, you know, and everything. And finally, when it came to a head, you know, she was leaving, and we were breaking up. I was out of work. It was just a totally chaos, you know. And I kept told to come to Alcoholics Anonymous two or three times. And I'd come, and then I wouldn't stay, and I'd do the thing, you know. I got sent here before they had, like, the 18-month programs. You know, you could do 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a month, whatever, 6 months, get your little card signed, or you sign it yourself, and I'd go about my way, right back to what I was doing before. And I caused a lot of chaos, hurt a lot of people, you know. And finally, when I finally hit my bottom, you know, I separated myself from my family completely because I was running amok. I didn't want them to know what to deal. And I ended up getting in the same profession as my brother. So people knew me, and they to tell him what was going on with me, but he would never call me, and I would never call him. And we didn't speak for quite a few years. But he knew that, you know, I was running amok. We ran amok together for a little while, but you know what? He couldn't hang. That's what happened. All the guys I ran amok with couldn't hang, and there I am out there all by myself, you know? And that's how it went, you know? And so, so anyway, I ended up in jail again, you know, Santa Barbara County, main jail. And I was getting booked in. And I'll never forget the smell from the holding cell. Never will forget that, you know. And I was getting booked in. They're going to house me. And I had a couple of real serious charges. You know. And the guy that was charged, the sergeant was going to book me in and everything. I said, "How you doing?" He goes, "I'm doing fine." You know, he goes, I go, "Oh, good." You know, we're talking this and that. And he goes, "I remember you." And he pulls out a stack up my file. It's about that thick, and it's from about 10 years before. And he says, "Well, I'm getting ready to retire, you know." And here I am. I'm getting booked into jail again. You know? So it wasn't pretty. Nothing was pretty in my life. Nothing was happy. My kids were just suffering, you know. I mean, I was a bad dad. I was a bad dad. And their mom wasn't much better. We were just back and forth, you know, on trying to take care of the kids. So I got in there, and And I tried to play the I'm an alcoholic drug addict card, and they said, we don't care because you got some felony charges. So I was trying to try to get in the STP program while I was in jail so I could get a start on looking good going into court. And they said, no, you're not going to do that. And I said, well, can I go stay at the farm? And they said, yeah, okay, we'll let you stay at the farm, which I was surprised, because usually they don't let you go to the farm if you have a serious charge, you know. So they bounced me back and forth for 73 days. And the whole time I was in jail, I stayed sober. The COs found the Pruno. The drugs got all used up before they got to me, so I stayed sober. And, you know, I'm starting to realize that maybe I should start thinking I had to do something else. I had no contact with my kids or my ex or anybody on the outside. You know? So I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do when I get out, what's going to happen and everything else. So they stick me in this little booth as a probation interview, you know, and they ask me these questions and this and that and everything. And they told me, well, we're going to consider you a functioning alcoholic. And I thought, what? You guys are crazy. You're crazier than me. I'm here locked up in jail in a little booth with a little TV talking to someone, and I'm not functioning very well right now. You know? So where do you get that? But, you know, I held jobs, I worked, and then I guess I considered that functioning. You know, I wasn't just roaming the streets, staying loaded and drunk and everything all the time. So, but I didn't understand that. I didn't know the meaning of a functioning alcoholic, and I didn't know the meaning of sobriety or anything else, you know. So They got me out of jail finally. Let me go. I mean, they let me go, but they released me on the condition that I also had an anger problem at the same time too. So I had to go to anger management. I had to come. I was still playing the alcoholic card, but it wasn't really on my record because they never gave me any charges for alcohol or drugs on that, you know. But they said, well, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, okay, well, let me do the anger management. So I had to pay for that, and I'll go to the meetings, you know. So I went to the meetings and everything, and I showed up here, and I thought, maybe I'll try something different, you know, because what I'm doing isn't working, and I'm not very bright as far as how to stay sober. And, there's this guy named Barry T. I'm sure some of you probably remember him. And Bob B. And Barry I knew from before now. It's when we were out running amok, you know. But he caught me in and he got sober. So it was someone here that I actually knew. And so he got me involved in at the Alano Club over there where it used to be. And he got me to come to meetings, got me to be a secretary, got me to help out here and there and this and that and the other, you know. And stayed sober. In the meantime, I got my two boys. We're living in a hotel, right? And we were living in a hotel before all this went down. So I'm trying to take care of them, work, take care of all my legal problems, and stay out of jail. And I'd love to say, since I've been sober, that I haven't been in a physical altercation or I haven't been back to jail. But I've been back to jail. And what it was is, my youngest son was graduating, eighth grade graduation, and there was a restraining order against me and my wife, but we decided we'd go to the graduation together to make it kind of make it normal for him, try that, right? So they had the graduation out at Rigetti High School. So by the time I get there's nowhere to sit, but this is one big spot. So we sat there, and we're out there watching everything. Who walks by right in front of me? My very first probation officer. Her daughter was graduating with my son. I didn't know it. So she turned me into my new probation officer because they rotate you around. They don't let you keep the same person all the time. Anyway, so they called me in one day, and she was a feisty little Mexican Indian, you know, about that tall, man. And she says, I'm going to violate you. And I said, well, this is what I was doing. You know, we were trying to make some normalcy. I'm trying to get my life back together and for my kid and everything. And nope. There's two other officers come in. And she knew I was pissed. You know, and they were waiting for me to go off. And then I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't give them the satisfaction. I was going to pick up another charge. So they haul me out here to the substation here in Orchid. And I'm standing there. I go, can I stay here? for the weekend because it was like a Friday. I didn't want to go all the way down to Maine jail. It's getting holding forever because I'm going to come back Monday morning. I'm going to go to court, you know. And she goes, well, seeing how you're doing all right. I says, yeah, we'll see if we can leave you here all weekend. Said, okay, great. Thank you. And they did. And I went to court. Had to start all over again. So I'm still, you know, I'm sober, but I'm still learning how to live life on life's terms. And they were on me heavy, too. Probation was on me really hot and heavy. They'd come and check me out every week and this and that and the other, you know. And I'd made up my mind that I wasn't going to go back to jail or be violated for alcohol, drink, or drugs. I said, I ain't gonna give them that one. That one's too easy, you know. And at the same time, I decided maybe I should stop doing some of my scandalous stuff that I used to do all the time. You know? And I did a lot. I grew up in this valley, you know. And like I said, I traveled all over the Western United States too for a while, so there's a lot of scandalous stuff going on there. See? So, you know, Bob helped me out, Barry helped me out for a long time and this and that. And, you know, I ended up living just right down the street from him, so it was real convenient. I could walk down the alley, go to his place, and he could talk, you know, study the book, and do this and that. And Bob, too. So I had both their numbers because you know what, I was new and I had this crisis stuff going on in my head all the time. And they told me, it says, well, you can do this and you know, try this. We suggest you do this or you can keep trying to figure this out on your own and you know, and that's okay, you know, just don't drink, don't get in trouble. So I tried doing what I was doing, running around in circles, chasing my tail, beating my head against the wall, and finally I said, hey, I'll try what they said, you know, and it worked. And I'm very grateful for that, you know, that they told me that. And then Barry finally moved. He moved to Missouri. Bob did not quite make it. He went back to drinking, and he passed away. You know. But for the time that they were around, they helped me, you know. And I met a lot of really cool people, and there's a lot of people, some people in this room that were here when I got sober, and I see a lot of people that are here that came in after me, and I'm glad to see you guys because you're still sober too. And you know, when you've been here for 20 years, you know, you get to see a lot of people come and go, and it's always nice to see the people that come and stay. And, you know, I've had a lot of things happen in my life that, you know, you think maybe I should have drank over. You know, and Kat, my wife, has been with me through the majority of it, which I appreciate, you know. In 2018, I was in an accident, broke my back, you know, and had surgery, recovered. Workman's comp said they put stuff in my back and it's supposed to come out after a year, and they said, no, you don't need to have that taken out. Battled back and forth for another year. Their doctor finally said, didn't you want that out of your back? I go, yeah. And they go, okay, then they took it out, and then I had another deal of recovery, and I had nothing to drink, you know, not going to drink over that. Healed up, had to have surgery on my shoulder, too, from the accident, so I did that, you know, made it through that. One thing I discovered when I broke my back was they were putting me in the hospital. This is down in Santa Clarita, and every time I've been to a doctor, and I have a doctor or anything, I always tell them I'm a recovering alcoholic, you know, with tendency to use drugs, too, you know. I always let them know. Well, they were putting me in the hospital for my back that night and go, well, we're going to give you some morphine. I said, I told you, man, I'm a recovering alcoholic drug addict. They go, well, you're going to really need this. One thing I discovered, I really like morphine. I really did, you know. And there's been a couple of drugs that's affected me that way. And when it does, it scared me. You know, it scared me. I could do other stuff and it didn't scare me, but that scared me. And I've never done it again, but yeah, it made an awakening in my head that, yeah, you know what? This stuff would probably kill me. And so I get over all of that, you know, and move along. Anyway, I ended up having to retire because they drug out everything so long, you know. And I didn't really want to retire. I wanted to work a few more years, this and that and everything, but it just didn't work out. So you know, we've got, you know, I've got a 15-year-old son, and the kid's great. Good grade, 6'3", involved with school, everything, does everything, and he's a good kid. He's a really good kid, and I've been able the opportunity to give him things, you know, that he wanted, and he's not spoiled. He don't act spoiled. You know. He's great, and so, you know, I got a couple, 3 more years, and to be out of school, out of high school, and hopefully. He's already getting some letters from colleges and stuff, and interested in him and stuff. He's a scholar. He's got the grades good enough. There's a scholar program at the school and stuff. He's been accepted. So we got one from Oregon, from College from Oregon, and one from Montana. Yeah. So he's gonna look at. He's gonna be able to look at options. And I do everything. We do everything we can to keep him going and everything. And not just me, not me. He does more and more than I do, you know. But I'm grateful for that, you know, because if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't know what to do, really. See, I already have 2 adult sons. They're growing up. One is doing fine, really good. And one is still bouncing in and out of recovery. And, you know, and he's 36, 37. And, so that's hard. That's hard, you know. But I've been around the line with him, and there's nothing more I can do, really do. You know, he's on his own. You know, but he's resilient. But he just keeps slipping. So you know, I'm really grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and the steps, you know. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and my life had become unmanageable. That was easy for me, you know. 2 and 3 were a little rough for me because I was very angry with God because my parents passed when I was little and this and that. So I was very angry with the God thing, and it took me a while. And practicing these and the traditions and the principles and everything for me to finally it hit me. They told me I could have a God of my own understanding. And once I finally found one, figured out what I wanted, that one, and came to believe, it was all easy. And it's still easy today, you know. And now I do. I talk to my God every day. And, you know, and I'm grateful. So this is the things that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. These are the things that I didn't learn growing up, you know. Because once I hit 18, I was like a dog off the chain, bam, you know. I was still not doing things good, right things in high school, but I was fortunately sly enough to just get away with a lot of stuff. But once I turned 18 and got to 20, 21, then it was on, you know. And it was like, I didn't care. I'm going to do what I want to do. And that's how it went. And I hurt a lot of people. I've hurt my wife, you know. And in 2016, I had left her. I'd left her, you know. And I was bad. It was a bad thing, you know. I did some bad things. And so today, I'm still making amends for that, you know. And go ahead and know something about that, you know, and I have to make amends to you too, because some of the stuff I told you at the time wasn't true. See, I was sober, but I'm still being a liar and a cheat and a thief, you know. And so these are the things that I need to take care of even today, several years later. So, you know, I apologize to my wife, apologize to Glenn. You know, and then, you know, we got back together, we're married, and, you know, there's still struggles with this, there's still an unknown, but about a year and a half ago, it was about 3 days before my birthday, And, oh, well, before that, I got a new doctor, and she said, I want to do your chest x-ray and stuff and this and that. Yeah. 3 days before my birthday, she called me up and says, you have lung cancer. You know? So I said, okay, great. Now what? So they sent me to a surgeon. They were going to take part of my lung, right? That's the first step. But then they do some other tests and everything, and they found out that I had some cancer in other parts of my body. So they couldn't do the surgery. So they do, then they were just small spots here and there, nothing big. The tumor in my lung was a pretty good size, though. But, so they did direct radiation, and I had chemo, and then they put me on a Keytruda, and everything kind of settled down. But I go in for treatment every 3 weeks. They draw my blood. She looks at my blood, and they send me in. I get my Keytruda treatment, and so on and so forth. And she told me, and at first she told me, she got stage four. You got stage four, right? So in the meantime, just recently, they scanned me again. And the tumor in my lung has shrunk some. And I'm just taking treatment. And, you know, and I've had some bouts with side effects. This isn't like, got the medicine, got the magic pill, and I'm all good, and off I go. No, sometimes it's rough, you know. And there's still no reason for me to drink. Absolutely none, you know. I went through one of my foster parents dying of cancer. Took him 10 years to die of it, you know. He went into remission, and it came back right before they said, you'll probably live. And he didn't make it. You know? So I'm very familiar with it. Earlier this year, I lost a brother, and I lost a nephew. One nephew to leukemia and a brother to cancer. So sometimes I'm scared, yeah. But sometimes I'm not. I've turned it over to my God, because I can't control it. And you know what? If I get to next February, I'm going to be 67. I've lived a lot longer than I thought I would. I tell you what, a lot longer. You know, I grew up in this valley, and I have been in fights in the alleys with tire irons and knives. I've been shot at in this valley, you know, way back when. So things could be a lot worse. Could be a lot worse, you know. I mean, cancer, this is not the greatest thing in the world to have, because I quit smoking like 13 years ago. And everything, but hate to say it, but shit happens, you know. And I'm grateful I got a program that I can rely on, that I can use to get through this stuff, you know. And I have a kind of God that I have, and I got some friends, and I got dogs. we got dirt bikes, and you know, I probably have more than I really should. Yeah. And I'm grateful for that. There's a lot more than I would love to have, but I take everything as it comes. And, you know, I've seen people get up here and say, I've got 5,338 days, you know, and I've never quite got that, because the only day I care about is today, you know, because, you know, I've got a few days back here, but the most important one is today. I've got to get through today. I've got to continue to do something to keep me sober today, and then coming here and sharing my story is part of it. And am I perfect? No, far from it, you know. Do I wish I was? I don't know how to act if I was perfect. I really wasn't, you know. I love people when they say they're perfectionists, and I always want to tell them, there's your first mistake right there. You know, there is no such thing as perfectionist or perfection. You know, we're all flawed in one way or another, and I do believe that. And I know I'm flawed, very, very much so. But I try to do better every day. And, you know, some days I'm better than others, and some days I'm not so good. But I've had a lot of really good experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been to a lot of different things, campouts and barbecues and dances and, you know, just this and that, you know. There's a lot to do being sober. Before, when I wasn't, I'd post up in my place and I'd just post up, you know, and be drinking. This room right here, for an example, is I didn't come to this room for a long time. I was always at the Ilano Club, because the Ilano Club is a Quonset hut, only had two big windows in the front, or one big window in the front. And that was suited me just fine. No windows, no light. This place in here had windows, it was bright and sunny, and, you know, it wasn't me. It wasn't me, you know, and it took me a while to come down here, you know. So that tells you the type of lifestyle I lived, you know. But I'm grateful for this club now, and, you know, and I miss the Ilano Club, because it was a lot of fun stuff going on there, you know. But it's gone, and so time moves on. And another thing I learned about Alcoholics Anonymous, I've seen a lot of stuff in here, even in this room and stuff, and at these meetings. And I was at another club at a meeting, and a fight broke out. And I looked over and I said, damn, Alcoholics Anonymous is the same everywhere. You know? Right at home. I've seen fights break out right here. You know? So anyway, and so I understand that, you know, and alcoholics are alcoholics wherever I go, and there's always a place I can go if I need to go, you know, and I'm grateful for that, really. So we've done a lot of traveling, and we have hardly ever went to a meeting anywhere where we've traveled, and I took a great picture up in Eureka. What's the name of that place? It's AA Bar and Grill. And I got a picture on my phone. And it's great big AA red letters that says Bar and Grill. And it's a real bar and grill. And I go, this is how they do it in Eureka, California. Crack me up, you know. I want to post that, you know, and I keep forgetting to, because it's really funny, you know. So then we were walking. We went for a little tour in Eureka, and we walked right by the outside on the street, and only got the sign right up there. AA Bar and Grill. Oh, my God. So some of the stuff I get to do, have gotten to go do, you know, that I would never have done if I would have never got sober. I'd have never got out of Death Valley, probably, you know. So I'm grateful for that. I got opportunities to do that kind of stuff, you know, and I want to do more. You know, absolutely. I am not tied here to because of my mental condition. I just got to drop in every 3 weeks, get checked out, and go get treatment for about an hour or whatever, you know, and then go about my way. And if I start feeling bad, they give me some medicine for that too, you know. And then I stay in contact with my doctor for changes in this and that. Because I realize if something changes, I need to let them know. So then they got to check me out. If you're new, welcome. You know, welcome. I was new once too, a while back. But the only thing I can tell you, and I lots of times I finish with this, is the only difference between you and me is I built up some days. When I wake up tomorrow morning, I'm just another alcoholic. That's it. You know. I like to keep it plain. I like to keep it simple, just like my days. I don't know how many thousand exactly I got behind me, because I'm only worried about today, you know. I try to stay focused in the now, not on what I have accomplished, because you know what? $5 and buy me a cup of coffee, and nobody else really gives a shit, you know. So I'm not gonna impress a lot of people with that, you know. So, and I don't try to, but I like to welcome people that are new, you know. There's hope here. There's always hope. And all the stuff that I've been through in the past few years and I didn't even come to even thinking about drinking, you know. It's a thing of past for me. And, you know, And I'm grateful for that. And I just go try to do it one day at a time. So. You know, I think that's it. I think I'm done. I don't know. I hope I didn't miss anything. I'm glad that I got to say some things that I probably needed to say. And you know, thanks for having me. You know, you guys are important to my sobriety. And it's good to see a lot of familiar faces. Thank you.